Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 2nd of April 2012, the podcast that tastes great and less filling. This is your host, Shane Killian. Let's make a mountain out of the news of the bogus. What on earth do politicians have against the homeless? And don't come back with any of this anti-right-wing crap. Like last time, we see liberals stopping people from helping the homeless. This time, it's New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who is actively stopping the donation of food to the homeless. And what's the worry? Is it the potential for foodborne illnesses? Is it the possibility of a scary person poisoning homeless people? Is it... I don't know, I'm trying here to think of a good reason for it, and I'm reaching. But Bloomberg's reason? Food donations to the homeless should be banned because the city doesn't know how much salt the homeless are getting. Yes, salt! Glenn Richter has made a routine about taking fresh leftover bagels from his synagogue and donating them to homeless shelters. But now he's stopped by the Bloomberg administration because they want to monitor the salt, fat, and fiber eaten by the homeless. Really? This is what we're worried about? People are going out of their way to make sure that the homeless aren't undernourished, and Bloomberg wants them to stop getting food because he's not sure it's healthy enough? Richter was stunned. Quote, "Somehow, we're being told that this is no good, and I think there is a degree of management that becomes micromanagement, and when you cross that line, simply what you're doing is wrong." Bloomberg's response was not just that the shelters shouldn't accept it, but that they shouldn't have been accepting it in the past. And these are the people that New Yorkers are relying on to help the poor and the homeless. What's it going to take for people to realize that politicians are not on our side? There should be an investigation into this ridiculous ban. Is Bloomberg in the pocket of the companies the city pays to provide food to the shelters? Or is he just an uncaring, incompetent busybody? Either way, it's not good, and it extends from him through the city's departments who all collaborated on this ban, including the Departments of Health and Homeless Services. Stop praising these people as advocates for the poor and public health, and start calling them what they are, bullies. Earlier this month, this podcast reported that businesses, which seem to be mostly if not solely government agencies and government-supported enterprises such as universities, are requiring applicants to provide their Facebook passwords as a condition of employment. Now, Facebook is taking a stand, even going so far as to threaten legal action against employers that make this requirement. In their statement, Facebook said, quote, "This practice undermines the privacy expectations and the security of both the user and the user's friends. It also potentially exposes the employer who seeks this access to unanticipated legal liability." Remember that giving someone access to a Facebook account also means they can see the activity of that person's friends. So if you have a friend who's seeking one of these jobs, even if you specify a post is for friends only, these employers, again, pretty much the U.S. government, can get access to these. They continue, quote, "As a user, you shouldn't be forced to share your private information and communications to get a job. And as the friend of a user, you shouldn't have to worry that your private information or communications will be revealed to someone you don't know and didn't intend to share with just because that user is looking for a job. That's why we've made it a violation of Facebook's statement of rights and responsibilities to share or solicit a Facebook password." Here's hoping they live up to this statement and start acting against these agencies and departments who are making this hideous and intrusive requirement. But the biggest action that can be taken is by Facebook users themselves, to know their rights and to refuse to give out their Facebook passwords or to sign in on their Facebook account on the employer's computer. And not just Facebook, but any other online account as well. You wouldn't give them your house keys or open up your house and say, "Look around all you want," would you? Treat your online accounts the same way. We've spent a lot of time on this podcast covering stories such as domain seizures, which take down not only one particular page or piece of content, but every website under that domain as well. Through it all, there's been at least the thought that ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, is independent and wouldn't actually go along with it themselves. Oh yeah? Think again. ICANN is now passing policies that make it easier for governments to seize entire web domains. Basically, ICANN published a paper intended to educate governments on how domains can be effectively seized and promised to work closely with governments to help them seize and censor domains. ICANN was made an independent organization to try and stop exactly this scenario. So what went wrong? Outgoing ICANN CEO Rod Beckstrom may have provided us with the answer, pointing out numerous, literally hundreds of conflicts of interest among ICANN members, including connections to domain registrars, new domains and top-level domains, and the Registrar Accreditation Agreements Negotiating Team, which negotiates new contracts with registrars, usually in secret. In his opening remarks to ICANN's 43rd public meeting, Beckstrom said, quote, ICANN must be able to act for the public good while placing commercial and financial interests in the appropriate context. How can it do all of this if all top leadership is from the very domain name industry it's supposed to coordinate independently? Reform of the board selection process is not just desirable, I believe it is imperative. Ideally, a fully independent and non-conflicted NOMCOM should be in place before the next nomination cycle begins. And, of course, the more domains that are seized, the more potential profits there are for the domain registrars, as people and organizations pay top dollar for popular domain names. More and more, we see the need to make the Internet as decentralized as possible and decoupled from countries and other political unions. They're becoming increasingly irrelevant anyway. For example, .tv and .me domains are now being used for television and personal websites respectively, instead of websites in the country of Tuvalu and Montenegro. Yet the people who take out these domain names are, according to ICANN's rules, supposed to operate under the laws of these countries, even if the individuals and servers don't operate anywhere near them. It's long past time to wrest the DNS system from this politically connected monopoly and have private, decentralized DNS services. Practically everything else on the Internet is decentralized, which is probably why governments are resorting to domain seizures in the first place. A decentralized system could also be made more secure and make it more difficult for phishing sites to operate. But while tools like MafiaFire can help those in the know to access the free and open resources they wish to, the system needs to support all Internet users. The price of not doing so just may be the undermining of every benefit the Internet gives to our lives. The city of Dayton, Tennessee was the site of the famous Scopes Monkey Trial in 1925. Well, it seems like Tennessee still wants to go down in history as the state that hates science. The Tennessee Senate has approved a bill, which passed the Tennessee House last year, to promote alternate scientific theories to the theory of evolution. Of course, there aren't any, so this is just another bill to leave the door wide open for teachers to teach creation and intelligent design, long-debunked ideas that don't even come close to the level of scientific theory and which are only there to try and sneak religion into the science classroom. While the supporters claim it's there to improve science education, of course it would do the exact opposite. It would undermine science education and make it harder for parents and school districts to make sure that science is being taught accurately. The foundation of both creationism and intelligent design is misinformation, not only about biological evolution, but geology, cosmology, physics, nuclear science, thermodynamics, and practically every other field of science. According to a statement made by the Tennessee members of the National Academy of Science, quote, by undermining the teaching of evolution in Tennessee's public schools, HB 368 and SB 893 would miseducate students, harm the state's national reputation, and weaken its efforts to compete in a science-driven global economy. They're absolutely right. The exact language of the law says the teacher shall not be prohibited, quote, from helping students understand, analyze, critique, and review in an objective manner the scientific strengths and scientific weaknesses of existing scientific theories covered in the course being taught. And what theories does it mention? Quote, the teaching of some scientific subjects, including but not limited to biological evolution, the chemical origins of life, global warming, and human cloning can cause controversy. In other words, things that primitive nutcase followers of Bronze Age religions don't like. See, these subjects don't cause all that much controversy in scientific circles. When they do, it's about the details about how things happened, or the magnitude, but not whether or not such things exist and are useful. All life on Earth shares a common ancestor, and is the product of descent through natural selection. This is a fact, and there is a mountain of evidence from genetics, developmental evolution, morphology, paleontology, biochemistry, and many other fields confirming this. There just is no scientific theory competing with all of this. No matter how much the creationists might wish their insane bogosity counted as scientific theory. Now you may ask, what's the problem with letting teachers, quote, helping students understand, analyze, critique, and review in an objective manner the scientific strengths and scientific weaknesses of existing scientific theories? Well, here's the thing. The Tennessee Board of Education already does that. State science standards exist to give the teachers the proper guidance as to the state of the science and how to handle questions that students may have as to how the scientific processes work. The so-called weaknesses are not genuine scientific problems with evolution, but misinformation cooked up solely to try and discredit evolution and support a religious view for the creation of human life. Things like, evolution violates the second law of thermodynamics. No, it doesn't. No transitional fossils have been found. Yes, they have. Evolution says something was created out of nothing. No, it doesn't. On and on and on. This language is nothing more than a euphemism to allow imagined problems with scientific theories like evolution to enter the classroom, which would include everything from Kent Hovind lectures to Jack Chick tracts. As it is, they can do that all they want as long as they stick to real science. But this lets in pseudoscience as well. The one consolation we may get from all this is that, in the past, such efforts have been completely unsuccessful. But in the process, numerous lawsuits are fought that the states and school districts ultimately lose, costing the taxpayers millions of dollars. Even in a best-case scenario, these laws are a hideous waste of money. But I guess in an election year, politicians don't care much about that. This isn't just about bringing up the next generation of scientists. It's not really about producing Nobel Prize winners or people who make amazing discoveries. It's about bringing up people capable of taking those discoveries and turning them into businesses that make our lives healthier, longer, and easier. The more we deny soundly established sciences like evolution, the more difficult we make it, and the harder it will be to create the next Silicon Valley. Benefits from the war on drugs? Who is actually in favor of it the most? While politicians and their cronies certainly profit from it, while the rest of us suffer, there is another group who benefits, the drug cartels themselves. Case in point, Mexican drug cartel leader El Chapo, who released a statement officially thanking American lawmakers for keeping drugs illegal. El Chapo is worth an estimated $1 billion, putting him up there with former President Gerald Ford, Berkshire Hathaway's Charles Munger, and Campbell Soup's Charlotte Weber. He's the 10th richest man in Mexico and the 55th most powerful man in the world, according to Forbes magazine. Yeah, he's doing all right for himself, and his business is flourishing with the big players. And why has he gotten so rich? Quote, I couldn't have gotten so stinking rich without George Bush, George Bush Sr., Ronald Reagan, even El Presidente Obama. None of them have the cojones to stand up to all the big money that wants to keep this stuff illegal. From the bottom of my heart, I want to say, gracias amigos, I owe my whole empire to you. Of course, getting so rich while operating under the law means being able to launder money effectively, which requires the clandestine cooperation of businessmen, bankers, and politicians to pull off, all of whom profit along the way. And people get hurt. Drug trafficking is cited as the major cause of violence among the U.S.-Mexican border. American cities are torn apart and bank accounts emptied as government taxes billions of dollars a year to fight the drug war. And the drug cartel leaders like El Chapo rake in the cash. Quote, whoever came up with this whole war on drugs, I would like to kiss him on the lips and shake his hand and buy him dinner with caviar and champagne. The war on drugs is the greatest thing that ever happened to me, and the day they decide to end that war will be a sad one for me and all of my closest friends. And if you don't believe me, ask those guys whose heads showed up in the ice chests. Okay, this is satire, from a couple of years ago from the mind of blogger David Henry Sterry. But the best satire is accurate and relevant, and boy did this hit the mark. Fake comments aside, El Chapo is the actual nickname of Joaquin Guzman Loera. And all of the facts presented about him are true. If Loera did have an effective way of safely getting his message out, he might say exactly this. He was from a poor family and stayed poor himself until Hector Salazar gave him his first break, putting him in charge of transporting drugs. For Loera, it was all upward from there. Far from making it difficult to produce, supply, and sell drugs, the drug war makes millionaires out of those who do. The profit motive for them is outrageous, and this is in a black market where the players are already acting outside the law, resulting in a violent trade that delivers unsafe products. Whereas if drugs were legal, these drug cartels would either be put out of business or be converted into legitimate businesses, competing with the likes of Bayer and Tylenol to peacefully produce these products and make them as safe as possible. There just isn't any good reason at all for continuing the ridiculous and insane war on drugs, and every reason in the world for ending it. What's it going to take for people to wake up and hold our politicians accountable? And now it's time to deprogram this week's biggest bogon emitter. Wisconsin State Senator Glenn Grothman cares about abused children. At least during election year. So much that he's taking the brave and courageous stance of blaming child abuse on something he hates. He's introduced State Bill 507, which formally designates, get this, single parenting as a contributing factor to child abuse. If passed, the bill would require the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board to increase public awareness of the link between single parenting and child abuse. Grothman said, quote, I guess as long as this state is going to fund a group called the Child Abuse and Neglect Prevention Board, at least that group could use the money that they have to publicize something that's politically incorrect, but I think has to be said in our society. It's a very politically difficult thing to deal with because over time you're having more and more families that are not old-fashioned families. There are even people who make fun of old-fashioned families. So he wants the board to promote marriage among single parents. I wonder how he'd feel if the single parent were homosexual and wanted to marry someone of the same sex. According to Grothman, studies show that children living with a single parent and that parent's partner are 20 times more likely to be sexually abused. Really? Oh, the horror! The horror! We have to do something right now before it occurs to people that this is a correlation-causation fallacy! It's not studies that show it, it's one study, showing that children raised in a single-parent home with a partner are 19.8 times as likely to be abused as children with married biological parents. We also need to think about what statistics aren't included. For example, the same study found that children living with only a single parent are less likely to be abused than children living with married parents. So promoting marriage among single parents may backfire. Of course, there are many other factors involved, such as poverty. Child abuse rates increase with poverty, and so does the rate of single parenthood. There's also a selection bias here. Married biological parents often split up when one parent abuses the children, so the ones that are left that don't abuse children show up more often in the statistics, while the others become single parent statistics. Besides, what does Grothman really want to happen? Does he want someone to stay with an abusive spouse just because of these statistics? Grothman has attacked the left wing before, saying that they want more single parents so that more people will be in poverty and will be dependent on welfare. But wait a minute. If liberals want more single parents, then why do they keep promoting things like contraception and sex education, things which are proven to lower pregnancy rates? And if it's the conservatives like Grothman who don't want there to be single parents, why aren't they for these things? Yes, yes, I know. Election year. Still, being this blatant about going after political enemies specifically for the purpose of grandstanding to the point where he acts against his stated goals definitely makes Glenn Grothman this week's biggest bogon emitter. And now it's time to redefine insanity by examining this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And in a first for this podcast, both of our unattractive, not-at-all-sought-after awards stem from the very same story. The Grothman Bill in the Wisconsin House is co-sponsored by Don Pridemore. Remember in the last segment when I asked if Grothman would rather have a spouse stay with an abusive partner? Well, Pridemore wants them to do exactly that, stay together in a bad marriage, supposedly to avoid child abuse. Remember that Grothman's statistic only compared single parents living with a partner without being married to married biological parents. Remember also the selection bias I pointed out. Since marriages with an abusive partner tend to end, removing themselves from the statistics as married biological parents. Pridemore has made the completely idiotic statement that these statistics mean that it would be better for people in that situation to stay together. Quote, if they can re-find those reasons and get back to why they got married in the first place, it might help. He also says that fathers are the disciplinarians, and without them, quote, kids tend to go astray. I think his mama should have smacked him more. Nah, that'd probably just make him worse. Of course, one big risk factor to abuse and neglect is a poor quality marriage. An unhealthy marriage in a home with a child can not only lead to abuse and neglect, but also depression and anxiety. With Pridemore, it's obvious what's only probable with Grothman. Since most single parents are women, the motivation here is to blame single mothers and lament the role a strong father plays in a child's life. Hey, if it's the same kind of influence demonstrated by Pridemore, I think children could do without it. What does he think battered wives should do? Just stay with their husbands? Get back to the reasons they got married, even if it turns out those reasons were a lie? Maybe we should just get back to the good old days of shotgun weddings, because there was just no abuse going on back then, right? Or maybe we men should just bonk single mothers on the head and drag them back to our caves. Okay, that's probably unfair. Pridemore probably isn't that much of a monster, mostly because he appears to be too stupid to understand the statistics anyway. No, he's just a moron, jumping on a bandwagon to bleed out his Bronze Age views in an election year. Of course, it's really difficult to see how these particular remarks are going to help him at all, which means that, while he shouldn't be put in charge of a knitting machine, Don Pridemore is perfectly suited to be this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this big white male, major fail, tooth and nail, tell a tale, moan and wail, hoist the sail, hill and dale, don't inhale, killer whale, half price sale, and touch the third rail edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at Bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening. Until next time, here's a quote from Thomas Huxley. I do not mean to suggest that scientific differences should be settled by universal suffrage, but I do conceive that solid proofs must be met by something more than empty and unsupported assertions. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. Bogosity.